Hello, everybody. Welcome to a new episode of the Dissenter. I'm your host, Ricardo Lopes, and today I'm joined by Mrs. Katerina Losmanova. She is currently finishing her postgraduate studies of philosophy at the University of Ostrava, where she graduated with a diploma thesis entitled Irrationality of a Wager on Life in the Context of Benatar's Antinatalism. She is one of the co-organizers of conferences on antinatalism in Ostrava as well as in Prague. At present, she is primarily concerned with geometry and metaphysics of space by a German philosopher, Gottfried Wilhelm Leibniz, but peripherally, she is still interested in the subject of antinatalism, too, especially in the history of Benatar's asymmetry argument. She is the editor of the book we're going to focus on today, History of Antinatalism, How Philosophy Has Challenged the Question of Procreation. So, Mrs. Losmanova, thank you a lot for taking the time to come on the show. It's a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you too. Nice to hear you.
Okay, great. So, my first question is, do we know when antinatalism started? I mean, who was the first person or philosopher that we know of, who expressed antinatalist views?
According to my opinion, the first antinatalist philosopher in a broader sense of the word was Thales of Miletus. In most textbooks on the history of philosophy, we can read that he was the first philosopher at all, but of course, nowhere we can read that he was at the same time the first antinatalist philosopher as well. However, what the textbooks on the history of philosophy do mention is his answer to the question of why he himself hasn't got any child. His answer was, "Because I love children." Therefore, although we only know a few fragmentary pieces of information about him, at least we can be sure that the first antinatalist philosopher in the broader sense of the word was definitely a philanthropic one.
So, talking about Thales of Miletus, he was a philosopher from antiquity, from ancient Greece. Were there any other antinatalists in antiquity?
The ancient times were incredibly progressive in this respect. We can find plenty of pessimistic sentences expressed either by philosophers or poets in their myths and tragedies. Among those personalities were, for example, the very first wise men Thales and Solon, pre-Socratic philosophers including Heraclitus and Empedocles, or the famous poets Sophocles and Euripides. On top of that, Hegesias kept encouraging people to kill themselves, but so fiercely and so successfully that he finally had to be banned from teaching such dangerous ideas in Alexandria. Moreover, even Plato confessed that rather the soul should be fruitful while thinking than the body while breathing. And the most ancient myth claiming that the highest wisdom is not to be born at all was later repeated by the young Aristotle as well. Moreover, and that's the most important, sometimes this idea was reflected even in their own practice.
Very interesting. And what about Christianity? Is it in any way associated with antinatalist ideas or at least traditional Christianity?
When I was recently defending my defining Christian antinatalism as a part of my doctoral final examination, the only objection of the committee was that Christian antinatalism is a kind of contradiction in terms. Of course, if anybody means under Christianity just the church, I must definitely agree. However, the church as an institution and the real Christian spirituality itself are something diametrically different. I can only recommend the article by Théophile de Giraud in our History of Antinatalism collection, where the inseparable connection of antinatalism with Christianity is described in detail. The connection is especially evident in case of the hell problem, according to my opinion. For how can anybody who believes in hell be so cruel that he gives life to sentient being who will most probably end in hell? Therefore, for me, not the Christian antinatalism itself, but on the contrary, rather the Christian pronatalism is a contradiction in terms.
What about outside of the Western world? Apart from Christianity, were there any other major religions with antinatalist ideas?
Especially Buddhism is usually considered to be a very pessimistic religion, for as the main Buddhistic tenet states, all life is suffering. However, the Buddhists do not see a solution in any kind of extinction. Rather, they suggest escaping the never-ending cycle of reincarnation via other means, including intensive meditation. Moreover, it's even hard to say whether Buddhism could be marked as a religion at all, and I do not know about any other explicitly antinatalistic religion, for religions in general usually aim to provide a way to escape from antinatalism, not to confirm it.
And what is the relationship between antinatalism and the philosophy of death? Because I would imagine that it has some similarities with the philosophy of death, at least to some extent, and death is an important subject in antinatalist philosophy.
Yes, you are right. The philosophy of death is still a very controversial issue among antinatalists, especially after Jivan Huang's suicide based on his premortalism. But that's rather a philosophy of suicide than a philosophy of death in general. On the one hand, death is something capable to improve our predicament, as Benatar calls it. It gives us a bit of hope that our suffering, at least, won't be eternal. However, at the same time, it's also capable to make our life totally senseless. Everything will be finally lost, so why to care about anything at all? Moreover, we don't even know whether death really means a final termination of our life and whether our suffering won't be yet intensified after the so-called death. In any case, and thanks to the asymmetry argument, I don't think the question of death could cast even the slightest doubt upon the question of antinatalism. For according to my and Benatar's opinion, even the eternal post-mortal bliss would not make anyone's life worth starting, even though it could, of course, make it not worth continuing.
So let's talk now about a couple of very prominent antinatalists. At least one of them identifies as so. But let's start with Schopenhauer. He is many times presented as the first openly self-identified antinatalism. Is that really antinatalist? Sorry, is that really the case? Was he really the first person to openly say that he was an antinatalist?
I don't think so. Schopenhauer is definitely a very striking kind of pessimist, especially because of the striking contrast between his pessimism and the optimistic spirit of the age when he lived. However, at the same time, he was explicitly inspired just by Buddhism, which just couldn't allow him to be an antinatalist in the proper sense of the word. Somewhere he explicitly writes that it's not it's not so easy to destroy the general will as it might seem at the first sight. Actually, when you don't procreate, you only prevent a concrete manifestation of the will itself, of the will from expressing itself, but the general will goes on unaffected.
And what about David Banneter? Is there something special about him? Is there any way he differs from other antinatalist philosophers?
That's a very good question. I explain it in more detail in the book, but now at least briefly. Banneter is the first one who connected all the aspects of antinatalism, which were already stated by his predecessors, but they were stated either in isolation or just incompletely. Therefore, it's just his book where the negative evaluation of life, together with the claim and even an attempt to explain the asymmetric relationship between good and evil, for the first time resulted into a seriously intended proposal of a concrete solution, which was the demand for a complete extinction of whole mankind. Therefore, he's indeed the first proponent of antinatalism in a narrow sense of the word, which is natural given that it was he himself who introduced the word, the very word itself. However, we shouldn't forget that there are many predecessors who promoted the idea in at least a slightly different sense long before Banneter.
What about his symmetry argument? What is the importance of this argument for antinatalist philosophy?
I guess that the asymmetry argument changes antinatalism in a broader sense of the word into its modern phase, developed especially by David Banneter. For without the asymmetry argument, there would be no difference between the very antinatalism itself and just a pessimism of a traditional kind. However, while the traditional pessimism is easily contestable on the empirical ground, at least, concerning the asymmetry argument, it's not the case. That's for sure the reason why, for example, Julio Cabrera calls this kind of argument a formal one, while the traditional pessimism introduces, on the contrary, a material one, a material argument. Indeed, it's just this kind of argument which makes antinatalism independent on any actual state of affairs, just as is the case of all arguments borrowed directly from formal logic.
So, as I was reading your book, History of Antinatalism, I noticed that you place an emphasis on how antinatalism evolved over time and the kinds of arguments that it incorporated. So, what are the kinds of arguments that people first considered, and what were some of the most prominent ones that were added more recently?
I'm glad that you correctly understand the main target of the book, which is indeed to reveal the complexity of a simple concept in course of history. This way, we could discern two basic constituents of contemporary antinatalism. The first one is the traditional pessimism, which originated already in the ancient times. And the second one is the asymmetry argument suggesting that it's better not to be born regardless on the pessimistic evaluation of life conditions. However, what I personally undertook to add was the so-called tutoristic argument. Up to now, I've never chanced on this word in connection with antinatalism at all, but I'm sure that it's just tutorism, that is the preference of safer solutions, which makes Benatar insisting on the asymmetric evaluation of pain and pleasure. However, given that the same kind of precocious or tutoristic argument could be identified already by the ancient Christian fathers at the latest, the only new achievement of Benatar consists in interconnecting those two old kinds of arguments with the idea that people should definitely go extinct.
So let's now talk a little bit about the several different applications of antinatalism to specific questions. Does it give us a new perspective on life, death, and the human condition, for example?
I don't think we can say that antinatalism gives us any new perspective either on life, death, or the human condition in general. Rather, it reminds us on the original and natural perspective, which has been systematically suppressed through the history. Of course, the ideas expressed by antinatalists have always been very unpopular, just as has always been anybody who tried to reveal any inconvenient truth. However, I must insist that people have never lacked the awareness about the human condition, not at all. I think it's quite the contrary. It's just by procreation how they try to avoid it, just to avoid the truth.
I understand. We've already touched a little bit on this earlier, but is there any relationship between antinatalism and pro-mortalism?
Of course there is, but I don't think antinatalism implies pro-mortalism. The reason is that in the long run, average people usually don't suffer so intensively to prefer death. I don't even agree again with Julio Cabrera that people who lost somebody this way, either deserved it or they just must respect it. Of course, everyone should be allowed to to decide himself, but there are strong arguments to do it as well as not to do it. According to my opinion, antinatalism was created rather to prevent anybody either from death or suicide, but not to persuade him to die earlier than he would naturally do.
So, what is the difference? And I think that this is an important difference that also Benatar points to. What is the difference between a life not worth starting and a life not worth continuing?
Yeah, according to Benatar, there's no life which is worth starting. For everybody suffers at least the slightest harm in course of their life. There's no escape for those who have ever been born. However, given that the premature death could bring about some considerable additional harm, there would be no reason to yet intensify it. Therefore, saying that any life is not worth continuing means something much stronger. It means a complete resignation on the effort to improve our life conditions. Indeed, also the most convenient option is always not to be born at all. The second most convenient one could be to continue living. Especially after escaping all the, for example, all the terrible experiences in childhood. In such case, it would be just as if you closed the Pandora's box too quickly.
Yeah, and does antinatalism connect in any way with the ethics of abortion? Does it tell us anything about that?
Yes, in Benatar's work it does. According to him, antinatalism implies that at least in its earliest stages, it's legitimate to terminate anyone's life. Sincerely, I don't remember his argument in its entirety, but what I do remember is that it didn't persuade me. However, nor did any argument against abortion. All of those are, according to my opinion, kinds of separate questions which are not supposed to be solved by antinatalists. The antinatalists should rather concentrate on the superior question of whether to prevent those very situations to even happen, not how to solve them after they already happened.
Does antinatalism tell us anything about human extinction? I mean, from an ethical perspective, should humans go extinct to fulfill some some ethical stance, let's say?
Not only they should go extinct, in fact, or in my opinion, soon they indeed will extinct. Given that we have for many years systematically destroyed our planet, which is the only habitable place for us, so now the best we can do is merely to reduce the effects of our indispensable extinction. And I don't know of any more effective way to do it but just to stop creating another people.
So, if life is not worth living, according at least to some antinatalists, we've already talked about pro-mortalism, but should people commit suicide as soon as they can?
My opinion is that everybody is free to decide himself. Although I definitely don't, I'm not the person who would recommend it, but I clearly understand that in some circumstances there's no better option but to commit a suicide. However, even in this case, nobody should do it as soon as possible, but rather after a detailed reflection. That's the only thing I can recommend.
Are there any good pro-natalist arguments, the opposite of antinatalism? I mean, are there instances, for example, where it would be ethical to procreate?
So far, I only chanced on a single strong pronatalist argument, which is the argument stated by Rivka Weinberg in her book The Risk of a Lifetime. She claims that when the sum of your desire to have a child and your ability to provide him everything which you would find sufficient for yourself, when this sum exceeds the risk, then you are allowed to risk it. The reason is that it's simply not only the child itself who deserves to avoid suffering, you deserve it to the same extent. When I was recently in a, so to say, some kind of middle age crisis, I was even considering to yield this social pressure based exactly on her argument, so strong it seemed to me. I was just thinking that in case of my boyfriend this applies, but now I already made me sure it doesn't. However, I still continue looking for another strong argument capable to convince me. I've always been searching some strong argument, but what's bad is that so far I've never found any reason.
Under the lens of antinatalism, would killing other people ever be morally permitted? Would homicide be morally permitted?
Maybe we should, first of all, we should distinguish two kinds of antinatalistic doctrines, a philanthropical one and, on the contrary, a misanthropical one. Curious as it might seem, Benatar deeply elaborated both of them. However, even by his misanthropical argumentation, he definitely doesn't permit killing other people. In fact, So far, I've not chanced on any serious antinatalistic doctrine capable to justify a murder. Of course, the majority of antinatalists are ready to proclaim procreation to be a murder, but they could do more hardly themselves encourage people, encourage anybody to be a murderer.
What about euthanasia? Does antinatalism have anything to say about that?
That's a very hard question, but my opinion is that euthanasia should be legal. Of course, it could be easily abused since there will always be many questionable cases, but in general, I think everybody should be helped or at least allowed to simply pass away when his incurable death condition starts to be unbearable.
So, one final question. Is there any relationship between antinatalism and nihilism?
Of course, nihilism is an attitude likely to result into antinatalism. For if you think that nothing is valuable, then you easily conclude that life is worthless as well. However, at the same time, antinatalists distinguish an important exception, as the exception claims there's at least one worthful case. I mean the case of suffering prevention, of course. Therefore, according to my opinion, antinatalists could hardly be nihilists in the proper sense of the word.
Okay, so Mrs. Loshmanova, let's end the interview here. Just before we go, apart from your book, History of Antinatalism, for which I will be leaving a link in the description box of this interview, is there any place on the internet where people can find your work? Would you like to mention something like that?
Yes, I have personal websites on academia.edu or my Facebook sites, but my academic works are on academia.edu.
Okay, great. I will include that in the description box of the interview. And Mrs. Loshmanova, it was a real pleasure to talk to you. Thank you for taking the time to come on the show.
Thank you too. It was a pleasure for me as well.
Hello everybody, thank you for watching this interview until the end. As you might have noticed, I've been doing this channel for 3 years, bringing you top academics and intellectuals from a variety of fields. And I would like to ask you to please visit my Patreon page and to consider making a pledge there. Even $1 would already be a great help. Otherwise, you also have links to PayPal in the description box of the interview. And please share it, leave a like, and hit the subscription button if you liked the interview. I would also like to give a huge thank you to my main patrons and PayPal supporters, Karen Litzke, Anne Blanchett, Per Helge Larsen, Lau Guerrero, Francis Ford, Hans Frederick Sunda, Ricardo Vladimiro, Craig Healy, Adam Castle, Olaf Alex, Jonathan Wiesel, Anian Kata, Jacob Klinkby, Matthew Whittingbird, Arnold Wolf, Tim Hollisey, Henry Kalanias, John Connors, Paulina Baron, Philip Force Connolly, Jerry Mueller, Herbert Gintis, Rutger Voss, Bo Weingard, Rebecca Neuberger Goldstein, Dan Demetriou, Robert Windegger, Rui Inácio, Arthur Coe, Zup, Marco Neves, Colin Holbrook, Susan Pinker, Thomas Trumbull, Bernardo Seixas, Pablo Santurbano, Simon Columbus, Jorge Espinha, Phil Kavanagh, Corey Clark, Mark Blythe, Roberto Inguanzo, Mikkel Stormir, Eric Neumann, Samuel Andreev, Tiago Nunes, Bernard Hugney, Alexander Dunbauer, Omri Hickson, Fergal Cusson, Yevhen Bodrenko, Hal Herzog, Nuno Machado, Don Ross, João Alves da Silva, Jonathan Librant, Oslem Bulut, Nathan Nguyen, Staten T, Samuel Correa, Eric Hines, Mark Smith, J.W., João Eira, Tom Hummel, David Sloan Wilson, Yacila Deza Araújo, Eden Solon, Romain Roach, Dmitry Grigoriev, Diego Londoño Correa, Tom Roth, Yannick Punter, Adaner Usmani, my producers Izar Webb, Jim Frank, Lucas Stafiniak, Ian Gilligan, Sergio Quadriano, Luis Caetano, Matthew Lavender, Tom Van Egdam, Curtis Dixon, João Linhares, Benedict Mueller, Vega Gidi, Sardas France, and Niruban Balachandran, and my executive producers, Michel Rugieski, Rosie, and James Pratt. Thank you for all.